Hey folks, this is an episode about sex and alcohol and how those things combine, so I wanted to give a content note. We will be talking about alcohol, of course, intoxication, possibly some mentions of addiction, and then of course a little bit of discussion of sexual assault and coercion, but that's not really the main focus of the episode. Take care of yourself, do what you gotta do. Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I've thought for many years that I'm allergic to red wine, and apparently I'm just not anymore. So I was enjoying some very nice red wine last night. Who are you, friend?
That sounds lovely. I am Bex. I am a sex educator and porn maker and 30 years old and still wine feels like a grown-up thing. Man, I don't know.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm not much of a wine person in general. I'm more into cocktails these days and like occasionally a beer, but yeah.
Yeah, generally if I'm drinking booze, it is some sort of cocktail or liquor. Mm-hmm. Because as listeners probably know and will come up more in this episode, booze doesn't tend to be my intoxicant of choice. I enjoy it to like mix things up or in social occasions or if a drink is going to be particularly tasty. But I would generally much prefer to smoke over drink.
Yep, and we will certainly get into that. I wanted to do an episode about sex and alcohol because it's kind of on my mind because people I know are doing dry January currently and just, you know, thinking about their relationship to alcohol. And, you know, it's a touchy subject when it comes to sex, certainly, mm-hmm. for very valid reasons. We think about intoxication play with like a harm reduction viewpoint, which is to say we believe people are going to do it anyway, might as well give them the information they need in order to do it in a safer way. So, right. Yeah.
I mean, what I find interesting, even the way you're calling it intoxication play and talking about that, because I think very much our perspective is like sometimes we do conscientiously combine intoxicants and sex or kink. Mm-hmm. But also, I think it is a thing that societally we just do a lot, like we drink on dates and things like that. And in those circumstances, we don't necessarily call it intoxication play. We call it going on a date and hooking up afterwards. And when we do that, we don't necessarily talk about all of the things that come around to that. So mm-hmm. I think this episode is hopefully aiming to have some of those more nuanced conversations.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So my personal stance on it is like I'm not one of these people who believes that drinking any amount of alcohol negates any consent that you're able to give. And it is mm-hmm. totally valid and fine if that is your stance, by the way. Like, if that is your personal boundary, if that's how you feel most comfortable, that neither you nor any people you're with should have had anything to drink, that's totally valid for you to uphold that. That's not mm-hmm. my personal policy for a number of different reasons. But if I was with someone who had that policy, of course, like, you know, I would bow down to their boundaries because that's more important. But in general, I would say like sex while tipsy or drunk is not something I would recommend for people who don't know each other very well or at all. I think that when you know someone better as a sexual partner, you have much more of a sense of what kinds of things they tend to be into and what kinds of things they tend to not be into. So you're able to have a sexual experience with them that probably is within the bounds of what they would consent to while sober. And also, I think that sex that you have while tipsy and especially while actually drunk should be pre-negotiated. That doesn't have to mean you sit down and say, first I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, and then this. It can mean an approach that's more like what Sinclair Sexsmith calls the palette of permission. So maybe you create a list together while you're still sober of like things that will be on the table, and you draw from that list. Of course, there still has to be room for anybody to safe word or stop the scene at any point if they want to. Do you think that that basically covers it, or do you have more thoughts on alcohol and consent?
Yeah, the only thing that I would add that I find really helpful, you mentioned that this can be, that it's really helpful to understand, to like know your partner pretty well if you're intoxicated and playing with them. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly true. I mean, I'm not going to say I have never been tipsy and like hooked up on a first date.
Yeah.
But same. The more intoxicated I am, the more close I feel like I need to be with that person, or the more of an established rapport I feel like I need to have with that person. And yeah, that just feels kind of intuitive to me. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I do think it is also worth considering not just your relationship to the person you're playing with, but your relationship to the intoxicated version of you. Like, how well do you know that guy? How much time do you spend as that guy? We're talking about booze right now, but really with any drug or intoxicant. Have you used this before? Do you know what kind of impact it has on you? Mm-hmm. Do you know what you're like, right? I know what tipsy me is like. I know what I'm like after I've had a drink or two. I also know that the version of me after I've had a drink or two can remember earlier in the evening when I wanted to fuck the person in front of me. And I still want to fuck the person in front of me, and that hasn't changed, and that's good to know. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I trust that guy's judgment. For drink me's judgment, he should ask tomorrow me. He should check back in.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, that is not a thing I knew 5 years ago about myself when I was not going out to drink all that often or like had less experience with this. Mm-hmm. So I do think in addition to understanding your partner and your relationship to them and the rapport you have with them, understanding like the intoxicant and your relationship to that intoxicant and your rapport with the intoxicated version of yourself is going to be helpful in understanding how much you're comfortable getting up to when you are tipsy or drunk or et cetera.
Yep. Absolutely. It's also good to know that kind of stuff about your partner or partners. Like, what do they look like when they're into a space of intoxication where maybe they're not making totally rational decisions or decisions that they would agree with in the morning? I also wanted to say that I think an important skill set around combining sex with alcohol is like the ability to say no and to assert your boundaries. And I don't want that to sound like victim blaming, because that's not how I mean it. Like, if someone's going to assault you, there's only so much control that you have over that. And I think it's weird when people act as if it's something you can completely control. But a lot of the situations I've gotten into where like someone was coercing me sexually with the help of alcohol were situations where like the person kept bringing me drinks or kept offering me drinks. And I just was sort of like, sure, whatever. And then that just becomes a domino effect where the more that I say yes, the more that I'm kind of in the mood to say yes. So it's just, you know, it's a slippery slope. I've learned now at an older age that it's totally okay for me to say no, even if like in the moment, my impulse is kind of to say yes. Like it's a self-protective measure to some extent. Like it's okay for me to be like, well, I know myself and I know that two is like fun, happy land. And then three drinks is more like, I don't know, a bit of a yikes. So, you know, with someone I don't know very well, I'm typically going to stay to two or fewer. But, you know, there's a lot of variables.
Right. And it's helpful to kind of come to that understanding of yourself after a little while and set yourself up for success in these situations.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about how alcohol affects the libido and kind of the arousal process. What do you notice in your own body as far as that goes?
So, I mean, this is where we get to like the two drink versus four drink versions of me, honestly. Little bit tipsy me wants all the cuddles and all of the touch and all of the, like, whether that is sexual or otherwise. Like, I don't know, tipsy me is usually a little horny, but mostly just wants all of the touch and affection. And, like, maybe that looks like your dick in my mouth, but there's other ways that we can do that. And then, like, when I am much more intoxicated, that tends to become less the case. Or I think I just get more sleepy than I do focused on anything else. And also sad, which again, why it is rarely my intoxicant of choice.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing. There's a point at which I will get either very sleepy or very sad or both. And it's really wild how stark that change is, like how sudden it can be at times, which is why, like, if I'm feeling like happy tipsy, I'm going to try to maybe sustain it, maintain it, like alternate drinks with water or switch to a lower ABV drink or something like that. Mm-hmm. There is a phenomenon known as whiskey dick. Yes. I feel this is important to address because I think a lot of people, when they experience this, if they've never heard of this phenomenon before, they're like, what the fuck? What's wrong with my genitals? But basically, because of the mechanism of how alcohol affects, I believe, blood vessels, it affects sensitivity, which in turn affects ability to become aroused physically, erections, lubrication, etc. So a lot of people experience some degree of like genital numbness or numbed sensation with alcohol. I certainly have noticed that, like, even if I've had one drink, it's significantly more difficult for me to reach orgasm than if I'd had none, mm-hmm. Which is just, you know, something I have to keep in mind in terms of like, is it really important to me that I come tonight, and, you know, alter my behavior based on that.
I always forget this is a thing.
Yeah.
Because I do often also combine, like, when I drink, because for me the SAD comes with a certain level of drinks, but it also comes with just X amount of time after drinking. Mm-hmm. Like, after I'm tipsy, then it will sometimes hit. So I often have, like, a joint before bed or something to balance that out, mm-hmm. when I go out drinking, which I don't do these days, but anyway. But that is certainly a thing I have experienced where, like, everything feels good and I'm very cuddly and like real turned on, and also my dick is just like, yeah, you ain't coming though, I don't, you can just do this, which can be really fun for edging or really frustrating or a combination of both depending on how you want to play with it.
Right. I was gonna say there are times when this might actually be advantageous, it might actually be what you're looking for. Like, I was looking on Reddit today, I searched the sex subreddit for alcohol just to see what people were saying about it. And there was one thread from a cis man who used to drink before sex fairly regularly. And now that he has quit drinking, he is coming too fast, or, you know, what he feels is too fast, which makes sense. Like, if you're used to having a very lowered level of sensitivity and then suddenly it's way higher, that's going to be a pretty big difference. I do think that a certain amount of like adjustment and time would probably help with that. But also, like, I don't know, if you have like a big night coming up and you really want to last longer, some people say like jerk off beforehand. Some people say like use a delay spray or something. But like, you know, one drink might be enough to do it if that's something that you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have also, obviously, we have talked about that I'm a person who enjoys playing with like intoxicant role plays and things. Mm-hmm. So that has also been a fun thing to play with, in just like, I don't get to feel things. Like, I get to be played with, and yeah, it feels good, but it just doesn't feel quite as good, huh? Well, that's unfortunate for you. We're doing all of this anyway. Which is quite fun.
Yeah. I find I sometimes get to a level of drunkenness where my genitals are so numbed out that I almost feel kind of stone. Like, I almost feel like I just don't want to receive touch there at all. And so sometimes that's a great mood for me to be more toppy and dominant with my partner, especially since inhibitions are reduced.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Shall we talk a little bit about inhibitions? I feel like this is the main reason why a lot of people like drunk sex, is like,
yeah,
it sort of shuts off a voice in your head that may be causing you to constantly judge yourself or worry about the sex you're having, or, you know, your performance or your attractiveness or that kind of thing. Certainly not, it shouldn't be your only treatment for your anxiety. A lot of people get into very bad situations from going down that rabbit hole, of course. But, you know, they call it liquid courage for a reason. It's certainly one tool in my toolbox, although I don't like to over rely on it for that.
It's also, for me, it's not just always about the, like, I guess, physical quieting of that voice or lowering of inhibitions, but there is also the social context or the little social bubble that it creates, that if you're a little bit tipsy, there's also that more like social permission and social leeway to do things. So even if that voice is in your head, you're like, oh, but like the tipsy version of me can be a little bit goofier than I normally would be. Mm-hmm. Or whatever that looks like, or can be a little bit filthier or a little bit sexier, or like the tipsy version of me is into anal, or, you know, whatever.
I think that this is a lot of the reason why alcohol is such a ubiquitous part of hookup culture, mm-hmm. is going on a first date with someone, even if it's not like a super romantic date, but more of a like, let's feel each other out before we hook up kind of thing, is nerve-wracking for a lot of folks. And there is a sense, at least for me, that like a little bit of alcohol can help you like let your guard down in a way that makes intimacy feel more possible. But at the mm-hmm. same time, it's like, sometimes I realize later on that it was like sort of a false intimacy, like kind of when you get really intoxicated and you just think everyone is awesome and that you're vibing with everyone. And then you realize mm-hmm. like, no, that's just how I felt in my brain. Mm-hmm. They were not really seeing like the real me. We were not really connecting about anything real. Mm-hmm. I've definitely had to be a bit careful about that in my experiences, like meeting up with people from apps and stuff. For hookups, because I would sometimes feel like we had this great emotional connection because we'd had a tipsy conversation. And it's like, that's just really not the same thing. It can be, but it's not necessarily.
Right. But your brain goes through all of the, you know, endorphins of feeling like you've connected with this person or whatever. And then looking back on the experience, it just doesn't quite live up to necessarily what it felt like.
Yep. Yeah, I think that like creating an informal policy for myself of no sex on the first date was helpful for me with this, because mm-hmm. I knew even if I got to the point late in the evening where like I was a little past tipsiness and into a zone of potential bad decisions, like I had already basically made that decision for myself. Mm-hmm. I know that not everybody's like this, but like I tend to pretty much stick to the decisions I make for myself earlier. I don't know, maybe it's like a Taurus thing. I'm just like really, really stubborn and resistant to change. I'm not always the most spontaneous person. But yeah, if I've already decided that, then it's harder for me to just be like, wow, I'm so drunk, I'm having such a good time, let's see where the evening takes us, even if I might necessarily like not want that.
Well, I think, I mean, regardless, I do think it's helpful to speak to like setting out with intentions for yourself and making these decisions. Mm-hmm. And like, I think it can be, regardless of whether you're stubborn or not, it can be difficult to like, even tipsy me can look at myself and be like, huh, sober me made this decision. Because 10 p.m. me can't be trusted with this decision, and it is 10 p.m., but I really think I can change this decision. Like,
yeah,
I don't think it takes even a huge amount. I think even just adding that little bit of awareness, that little bit of consciousness of like, wow, I am consciously ignoring sober me's decisions in this moment. Is that a thing I want to do? Like, mm-hmm. that moment of thought in and of itself is a helpful thing to contribute to the situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Awareness is often a big part of the solution to a lot of problems.
Right. And I think that awareness can come from setting intention and keeping like, and fucking remembering it. I don't know how I was going to say that.
Yeah, another thing that we've done is, like, if I had been texting you earlier in the day, like, I'm so excited to go on this date with this person later. They're really hot. I'm really looking forward to hooking up with them. And then I would get tipsy or drunk on the date, and then I would be texting with you. And sometimes I would be like, should I sleep with this person? And you'd be like, well, sober you was, like, into it. So I don't think that it's, like, against, you know, the decision that you would make in any other situation. And then of course I do have to weigh the aspect of like, is this a person I trust? Is this a person I would feel safe around, in this state? Which is another factor. And this is a reason why, a lot of times when I was going on a lot of these like hookup datey things, I would just suggest like making out in an alleyway at the end of the date rather than going back to somebody's house and fucking. Because for me, that sort of bridged the gap between my desire to do something physical with this person and my knowledge that, like, maybe that isn't the wisest decision for me right now. maybe, you know, I'm gonna, sometimes you get like, I don't know if anybody else gets this, but like alcohol paranoia, similar to like with weed, where like I'll be at somebody's house for a hookup and I'll just suddenly have that moment where I'm like, whoa, how did I get here? Like, why did I come here again? Like, and you know, it's just, I would prefer the alleyway makeout if I'm not sure about somebody.
What I love about the alleyway makeout is that it also, because for me, what I find so difficult about you're like, you don't have sex on the first date. That super makes sense to me. I have no idea how into someone I am until I have touched them in at least some way.
Yeah.
Like, I just, this is a thing that I have thought to be true in the past and have just doubled down on. Like, someone giving me a hug alone, can be like, oh, you touched my body and good. Yeah, I'm into you now. But I can have no idea until I have, like, touched them.
Yeah, so I feel that.
Especially, like, if I'm thinking about going on more dates with someone or fucking someone regularly, like, it's so hard for me to conceive of if that's a thing I'm going to want to do without having a little bit of an idea of what our bodies feel like together. Mm-hmm. And making out in an alleyway gives you this, like, built-in stop, like you were talking about. There's only so much you can get up to, right?
Yeah.
and it gives me a chance to, like, feel how our bodies move together and the way we feel just pushed up against each other and doing sexy things to one another, and if that is a thing I even want more of in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're a good kisser, which honestly
makes a big
surprisingly
difference.
Surprisingly hard to find and hugely important.
Yeah, and different people have different definitions of what a good kisser is, so it's kind of like a little compatibility check.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk about how alcohol compares to weed. Mostly because I would encourage you, if you're like listening to this and you're like, wow, those effects sound potentially helpful for me in terms of sex or even masturbation. If you live in a place where weed is legal and you're open to trying it, or even if you live in a place where you can get weed and you're open to trying it, I think pretty much it's like it has the same effects in many ways as far as disinhibition and more flirtiness or sexy feelings. But for me, at least, without any of the downsides in terms of lowered sensitivity, hangovers, risk of serious addiction, although, you know, there's some debate about whether or not you can be addicted to weed. I don't really know enough about that. But I mean, I would strongly encourage anybody who is fine with both of these substances to use weed over booze in almost all cases. But like, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it is generally my preference. I'm gonna sound like the fucking stereotypical stoner, but when you find the right strain, I do find that I can have like, I can also be more precise with the effects I'm shooting for depending on the strain that I'm going to smoke. Like, there are strains that make my body feel particularly like that cuddly, sensitive, sensual, my brain is giving me like fluidy, liquidy kind of feelings, but just all touch feels just warm and sensual and kind of things in a way that I get with booze. The right strain can also do that for me and can disinhibit me in certain ways and can, like, chill me out. I will say I feel more intoxicated with booze, but that is just because it is the substance I use less.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that more of an exaggeration on the, like, intoxicant itself feelings if that is the thing I am playing with.
Mm-hmm.
But if I am just going in it for the disinhibition or the heightened sensation or that sort of thing, weed is great for that.
Yeah, the heightening of sensation is a big thing for me. I also find that it just kickstarts arousal for me much more easily. A couple warnings, though. First thing is, like, a lot of people do experience paranoia on weed, which is sort of the exact opposite of some of the effects that we're describing here as desirable. If that's you, it's totally possible that there are certain formulations or strains that would not do that, like edibles or oils or what have you. But also, like, you know, I do know people who, no matter what they try, it just makes them super anxious. And, you know, that's fine. They don't have to do it. Another thing is I would be very careful about mixing weed with booze. particularly if you don't do one or both of those very often. I find that it is not a 1+1=2 situation for me. Like, it is, it's like 1+1=5. Like, they seem to multiply each other sometimes in ways that lead me to like really undesirable effects, like intense dizziness or feeling really sort of derealized. So be very careful and sparing if you decide to go that route, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a whole different flavor of intoxication. It is all, like I said, I often combine when I am like coming down towards the end of a night and towards the end of feeling tipsy, because the way I feel towards the end of drinking is less than great, and I am like we said, quite well acquainted with the assorted strains and the way they work for me. Yeah, no, that is definitely turns the intoxication up quite a bit when you combine them.
Yeah, and also if you're going to like a bar or something for a date sometime in the future when we can do that again, I think a lot of people feel hesitant about the idea of like saying no to alcohol in that type of situation, especially because some people are really shitty about that and will just be like, why don't you drink? Why aren't you drinking? But there have been times when like I didn't want to drink that night for whatever reason. So I would order like, you know, a soda or something. And then I would bring my little weed vape and have some of that like either before or after the date, or like step out in the middle to do that. Like I would inform the person I'm with. I don't want to just like come back with a different personality. but it helps me avoid that feeling of like, wow, I'm so sober and you're not. And that's weird. Although, of course, staying sober is also fine, too. But, you know, this is an episode about intoxication, among other things.
Right. And if you are a person who's not used to that, that difference can feel a lot more stark than it can if you are someone who just is used to being the sober person in the room. Because, like, I have also been that guy at points in my life, and that's fun and a whole different adventure. But if that's not a thing you're used to, it can feel very different.
This episode of the Dildorks is sponsored by DesignerBait. That's designurbate.com. It is a free service that will create a beautiful chatterbait profile with just a few clicks. So if you're a sex worker on the Chatterbait platform, or you're hoping to move into that platform, you can go to designurbate.com. That's DesignurBate.com. And with just a few clicks, you can create a free Chatterbait profile design in just a few minutes. Thank you so much, DesignerBait. Okay, let's get into some listener questions about alcohol. This one I think is really interesting. This listener asked, how would you advise a lifetime non-drinker get into intoxication kink? And my first thought was like, I probably wouldn't. Like, I feel like if you're a lifetime non-drinker, that's probably for a reason. Either a reason that's important to you or just, you know, a lack of interest. And I really don't think that you have to start drinking just to do intoxication kink. Like, there's weed, but also there's, like, extreme sleepiness is a lot like intoxication. Some people even feel a bit intoxicated on, like, caffeine. If you ever take, like, cold and flu meds when you're not feeling well, like, that could induce an effect like that. Yeah, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not drinking for a reason, I think there are a great many alternatives. If you're not drinking out of circumstance, like for me, I didn't start drinking until well after it was legal, simply because I didn't have friends who drank. I didn't have someone to tell me what drinks I might like. I didn't have circumstances in which I wanted to experiment with this big, scary idea of losing my inhibitions. I like those. They make me make semi-wise decisions generally, right? So if you're in that kind of situation, if you're like, no, this idea of like losing all this is kind of hot to me, but also I don't quite know what to do with that. I don't know how to do it. And I just haven't yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing is start real, real slow. And start alongside someone, hopefully, who has experience drinking and who has experience with you and who you trust, and to take care of you, right? And someone who you feel quite safe around.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first thing I would say to do is drink one night. Nothing else. Just mm-hmm. watch a movie together and have a drink, maybe two drinks. Stop before you really feel like you're feeling anything even and see how you feel the next day, right? Mm-hmm. And do that a couple times and just monitor, like, what does intoxication feel like? Because you might not be the best judge of how intoxicated you are the first couple of times you drink, mm-hmm. which is why I said probably stop a little earlier than you think you should, and that's why it'll be helpful to have someone with you. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to fuck yourself up for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But do that a couple times, a couple weeks apart, and get a feel for what that feels like in your body. And then presumably this person that you're trusting is also someone that you're planning on fucking or doing some sort of intoxicant kind of play with. And once you've done this a few times and know how to talk about what the tipsy versions of y'all are like together, then I would explore incorporating sex or kink or whatever you want that to look like, and including and having, you know, just as many conversations about all of that. But I would say if you are planning on exploring this, the first thing you need to explore is what alcohol does in your body. And that is one thing to experiment about all on its own and get lots of information about before we even consider incorporating kink or sex.
Yeah, I would say you could also try masturbating while you're tipsy, mm-hmm. see how that feels, just get to know how it affects your responses. I've also learned a lot about my own intoxicated sexual responses by like sexting or flirting via text while mm-hmm. tipsy. Because
my thumbs are just so huge when I'm drunk, though. It's just...
I have not encountered that problem.
Sorry, none of the words come out the way I mean them to. When I'm drunk, I type something and then I read back and I'm like, that's chaos. None of that means anything.
Yeah. I think it's helpful because, like, I've had times where, like, maybe I had 3 or 4 drinks and then I was, like, really overtly flirting with someone. And then the next day I looked at it and I was like, ooh, like, I don't feel great about that. Either I feel like I crossed their boundaries a little or could have, or I mm-hmm. feel like I crossed my own boundaries or I said something that just, like, wasn't really me. Mm-hmm. So then I know, like, maybe 2 drinks is the golden zone for me, and maybe mm-hmm. I don't want to go past that because then I'm going to do and say things that I'm going to regret, and it's just good to have a sense of that.
Mm-hmm. And that gives you a little bit of a safer zone to, like, explore those things while also in the comfort of your own space.
Yeah. Also, since this person has not drank before, I do want to go into mom mode here for a second and remind mm-hmm. new drinkers and old drinkers alike that, in my experience, the best way to avoid a hangover is to drink water, a lot of it, throughout the time that you're drinking, and then also after you're drinking, like before you go to bed. Like, have a glass of water with you and be drinking that as often or more often than you're drinking your alcoholic drink. I usually try to do like 1 big glass of water per drink, no matter what size the drink is. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I do is, like, if I get to the end of the night and I'm about to go to bed and I'm feeling already kind of headachy or nauseous or hangovery, I'll drink even more water and I'll have like a slice of bread or like a slice of toast. I don't know mm-hmm. if that's like scientifically backed, but I always find that that works for me. In my mind, it's like it's absorbing all the alcohol in my stomach or something. I don't know.
Well, I do feel like having something in my stomach helps to alleviate some, like, queasiness or nausea or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm already primed to not feel great and my stomach is just liquid, that's probably less than ideal.
Yeah.
So anything really carby that can, like, absorb that or just kind of take up space in your stomach, I find helpful.
Yep. Another listener asked, are there advantages to sex while drunk other than the typically discussed reduction of inhibitions? I think maybe it sort of can help you relax your vag or your butthole p- potentially. I've heard some people say that. I don't know
I
that
can
I've
see that.
I've particularly noticed that myself. What else comes up for you with this?
I can't think of anything passive beyond you get to be drunk and having sex, which like could be a pro or a con depending on who you are. But like for me, that is the impact alcohol has on sex. For me, I get to experience drunkenness and sex at the same time, which depending on the day can feel any number of ways.
Yeah.
But I haven't noticed anything like specific in addition to the drunkenness, you know what I mean? Like anything else that it does for me in the way that like weed, I feel intoxication and a heightened sensitivity. Not much that I can come to for booze with that.
Yeah, it's really not my sexual drug of choice. It's, I don't know. I just usually feel a little bit numb and a little bit sleepy. Yeah, the reduction of inhibitions is like the main thing for me. And the fact that I find it inherently hot to be a little bit out of commission mentally during sex sometimes in a kink way of like being ravished or overtaken or used or whatever the narrative is for the kink thing that we're doing.
There is something in the like, as I said, I too find it like inherently hot to be thinking about intoxication and sex. And I think for me, there is also something about the heightened vulnerability there. In that, like, there is a vulnerability, corruptibility, like, not fragility, but something to someone being, like, intoxicated during sex, right? You are in a more susceptible position, I guess, which in a submissive headspace can feel really good to me.
Yeah, and it can sometimes help me go deeper into, like, little space for the purposes of age play, which sounds sort of odd because it's not like I have any experiences of having been a little girl who was drunk, but I think that drunkenness can induce a sort of childlike way of looking at the world sometimes for me, which plays into that nicely.
Yeah, there is a gleeful, I don't know, just wholesomeness and like I guess almost purity of emotion that comes with drunkenness. Like there is not a whole lot of nuance to the way I'm thinking about things or the feelings I'm having when I'm tipsy. Whatever I am feeling, I am just feeling, which feels really related to little space for me.
Yep, but that's also true of weed for me. I feel like the secret subtext of this episode is just like, alcohol is cool, but like weed, though. Good stuff. This listener asked, if you're doing kink after drinking, is it usually pre-negotiated / planned in advance, or is it more spontaneous? I find it interesting that this question is phrased as, is it usually? Because I think if we look at in the world in general, I think it usually is not pre-negotiated, but that's kind of a problem.
Right. In my experience, I would say, actually, in my experience, it is probably not pre-negotiated, but let me tell you why. Because most of the kink that I am typically doing while tipsy, well, that's a lie. It is pre-negotiated in that my partner and I both understand that we are perverts, and when someone is drunk, we're like, oh, you're drunk? It's an opportunity to play with our intoxication kink. Let's do that thing.
Yeah.
So, like, it is built into many, like, oh, it's our one time every 2.5 months. We're going to go out for drinks. Ooh. And that's, like, part of the experience. But also, much of the kink that I do sits in the, like, role play realm and the story realm. So often we're tipsy and we're like, hey, this is what I'm thinking about. Want to play that game? If, however, I were going to get tipsy and hit someone, which I wouldn't, but if that were the genre of kink I were doing, yes, that is something that I would feel much more inclined to negotiate in advance. And I wouldn't like stumble into an intoxication role play with someone who I had never played with before or never been drunk with before. But this is kind of speaking to that social context that exists around my relationship already, where we're like, hey, this is a thing we both know we enjoy, and we both also know we don't drink all that often. So when it's going to happen, it's already kind of on both of our minds, and it doesn't, we are both comfortable enough with tipsy versions of ourselves to be like, no, I know how to say the difference between, hey, so you want to do the thing that we typically do? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, no, you're actually tired tonight. Okay, that's fine. You know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel similarly. It's very much, again, the palette of permission idea. Mm-hmm. Like, in my relationship, because we've been together for over 4 years, like, my partner knows what I'm generally going to be up for and not up for, and I feel pretty comfy stopping them or telling them if there's something that I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. I will say that if we're going to do, like, a heavy intoxication scene and, like, that's what it's about is the intoxication, I do think we usually talk through what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Especially because, like, that feeling of extreme intoxication can be really, like, disorienting and scary at times. Mm-hmm. if you start to get nervous, like, about not having control over what's happening to you. Mm-hmm. And I would also want, like, definitely a safe word system in place, whether it's one word or the stoplight system or what have you. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say, which you touched on, is, like, if you're doing kink that has a significant degree of physical risk, I mean, emotional risk too, but I'm specifically thinking about physical risk right now, like things like flogging or electrostimulation or wax play or even spanking, like, you know, I would be hesitant to top for that stuff while past.
Please don't drunkenly tie people up. Please don't. Please put the rope down.
Yeah,
that's a line I'll draw.
Like, for the same reason that you shouldn't drive while drunk. Like, there can be a sense of inflated confidence that comes with drunkenness where you're like, I can totally flog this person. My aim will be so good. And it's like, well, like, neurologically, what alcohol does to your brain, you will not have as good depth perception, coordination, judgment, all of that kind of stuff. So be mindful of that, and if you plan on topping, I would not really recommend that you be intoxicated, or at least I would suggest that you keep it very minimal. Mm-hmm. This person said, I love flirting with people at bars, but when it comes to taking them home, I worry about how drunk they are and if they can consent. Is there a way to politely ask how many they've had, or should I just not do anything with them the first time?
I think... Well, I can't answer that question for you. I mean, that depends on where your comfort level is going to fall on this. First of all, I don't think the question you need is how many drinks have you had, because mm-hmm. you don't know how alcohol affects this person, right?
Yeah, or the intensity of the drinks that they've had.
Exactly. So I would say... So... I can't tell you how to navigate this. I can tell you how I navigate this. If I am talking to someone at a party or something where drinks are about, and they are intoxicated to a level where it is apparent to me, a stranger, that their judgment is impaired, mm-hmm. I'm not putting my dick in them that night. I don't need to. That's enough for me, right? That's enough of a sign that I don't know how much I can trust their judgment, and I'm not rolling the dice on that. I'm not interested in that. Mm-hmm. If they are within the range of like, oh, I know you have been drinking, maybe I've had a drink or something, we have been having a good evening and you seem, you know, you're having a good time, I don't know what that looks like for you. I will generally have enough conversation with them that, like, again, if it would have become apparent to me as a stranger, I would have seen it at this point, right? I've been talking to them for a little while, I've seen what their judgment looks like. Mm-hmm. And then I will, like, I would probably check in with something cute and flirty that brings that idea into the room that, like, you mm-hmm. know. So I might say something like, you're really fucking cute and I'm thinking about, like, inviting you upstairs to my room, but also I met you at a bar and, like, I'm trying to be a responsible adult. So, like, how would you feel if I did something like that, right? Like,
yeah.
How are you feeling about maybe talking about something like that, right? Or, mm-hmm. like, I'm feeling inclined to invite you to come back home with me, but I also don't know how long, like, you've been hanging out in this bar and I don't want to ask mm-hmm. you a thing you wouldn't be comfortable with, right? Or I don't know how you're feeling at this point or whatever. So that just brings into the room this idea that, like, I do want to be conscientious of, like, how intoxicated you are and how capable you feel of making this decision. And I would like to pose this decision to you. How are you feeling about that?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully their answer in that moment will give you, hopefully, like, nudge you in a direction, help you feel a little bit more comfortable, or, like, help you decide that, like, you know what? Yeah, call me tomorrow. You know, text me in the morning. Do you know the Neon Trees song, Text Me in the Morning? It's delightful, and it's about this exact feeling.
I don't. I should listen to that, though.
It's very cute. And the chorus is essentially, like, you're really cute. I'm really into you. You're really tipsy. So text me in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think setting something up like that, like, you're really cute. I'm inclined to do these things. Let's open up that conversation and give them the opportunity to kind of advocate for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think if someone is in a bar, they're an adult. They should hopefully be able to represent their own experience. And then from there, it's a judgment call on what feels comfortable for you.
Yeah, it's a very tricky question. I've been the drunker person in this type of interaction before, and I've sometimes had a reaction of, like, feeling like my agency was being dismissed if somebody was like, well, you've had one drink and you can't consent, so I'm not going to make any mm-hmm. move tonight. I don't know. That frustrated me a little bit, even though now as a more mature person who's thought it through, like, I understand that probably what they were actually saying was, this is a boundary for me, that I don't want to hook up with you while you've had a drink. But at the time, it felt like they were denying my reality to me because I was like, mm-hmm. I've had one drink. I'm, like, perfectly capable. Like, you're listening to how I'm speaking. Like, I'm not slurring my words. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying things that I wouldn't ordinarily say. But, you know, have to respect people's boundaries. The best time that this move has been pulled on me is I was at a party once and I was flirting with this guy. We used to call him Good Dick Garbage Human. you remember this person?
That guy.
Wow, yeah. I haven't talked about him in a while. And I definitely had a huge crush on him and was, like, very interested in doing stuff with him. But it was late in the night at this party and I was kind of drunk. And he walked me to the subway and I said something about how, like, I was kind of sad, like, I had been expecting him to make a move on me that night. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, I definitely would have made a move on you if you weren't drunk. Like, we're definitely going to do that another time when you're not drunk. And the way that he said it was just, like, so confident and flirty that I was, like, actually excited for that to happen. Like, it didn't feel like a rejection to me. It felt like this isn't the right time. It almost felt like he was saying, like, you're not in the right place to fully appreciate all the pleasure that is going to be involved in that right now. And I want to wait mm-hmm. until you are, which I think is a really lovely way of doing that.
Yeah, that's really delightful. And yeah. I do think, like, I think that's a really fantastic way to set that boundary. I do also want to mention that, like, I also recognize what you're talking about and having that, like, accountability taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can be more help, which is why I think it can be helpful to, like, bring this question into the room rather mm-hmm. than, like, unilaterally make the decision.
Yeah.
Like, you are able to have your line where you're like, this is where I'm not comfortable fucking someone, and that you can, like, advertise that as your line. And I do think it's really helpful to be like, this is the apprehension I'm having. And then, I guess, for lack of a better term, give them the chance to, like, make their case. Give
yeah.
them the chance to be like, you know, oh, that would be lovely. I'd love that. And, like, I've only had, like, a drink or two this evening, and that's really comfortable for me, or whatever. And, like, you may wind up through more conversation talking about what feels comfortable for both of you.
Right.
I don't think it needs – I don't think that's a call you should make on your own is, I think, what I was getting at.
Yeah. Unless that is unilaterally your boundary that, like,
right.
absolutely right. no alcohol should have touched the lips of any person I am doing sex stuff with, which is fine.
Right.
I think that a common pitfall that people, especially men, fall into when they try to ask this question is they invoke Me Too type stuff for no mm-hmm. reason. Like, I've had yeah. dudes say, not in so many words, but basically say, the reason I don't want to fuck you when you've had alcohol is, like, it's just so easy for women after the fact to say that it wasn't consensual. And then I've been Me Too'd. And it's just
yeah,
like,
it's-
I hear you like, that's a thing that does occasionally happen. But no matter how you say that, you're sounding like a fucking anti-feminist MRA, even if you're not. And there's just way better ways to do it. Like, I've also had people be like, not comfy having sex with you tonight in this state, but like, do you want to make out? Like I said earlier, like making out in the alleyway, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's like, if you do really want to make out and you do really feel comfortable doing that, I don't know, that can feel less like a rejection and also does not need to does not need to involve like making the person you're talking to out to be some kind of like I don't know, angry feminist shrew who's gonna like make up lies about you. Like, this is just like MRA discourse bullshit. Like, I don't know, there's no need.
Yeah, and like, I understand that there are many cis men who have not been confronted with this reality up mm-hmm. until the past 5 years or whatever. Like, this is not a thing that they have thought about, so this is a new anxiety for them. Mm-hmm. Welcome. Those of us socialized as women have been anxious about this for the entirety of our lives. But I understand this is a new thing that y'all are grappling with, and I understand that that can be challenging, right? To feel like you are expected to respect these rules that were not articulated to you growing mm-hmm. up, feel like you are supposed to navigate these conversations that were never role models for you. Like, I get that that's challenging. And on a date, really not the associations you want to be making when you are like actively talking about fucking someone. Your first thought really shouldn't be about like sexual assault. Like, it's just not the thing you want to be bringing into the room in that moment. Very different energies.
It has the vibe of like, the issue is not that I would sexually assault you. The issue is that you would call me out for having sexually assaulted you. Or like, I don't know. The vibe of it is very bad. And like, I feel like when dudes make this joke, to me at least, they often seem to think that they're making a joke. Like, they think that it's funny.
Yeah.
They think that I'll think it's funny. And I'm like, you just made a joke about raping me to me. Like, that's not it's not a joke. It's not funny. And jokes are supposed to be funny. And jokes are not supposed to make you fear for your life. So I don't care that it's not scary to you. It's always scary to me, and it's very easy to just never do it under any circumstances.
Exactly. And it displays this fundamental lack of understanding about the conversation that you're having and the weight of the things that you were referencing.
Yeah. Yeah, just don't do it. I think at this point in my life, if I was at a bar talking to someone, even if we were hitting it off and someone made a joke like that, I really do think I would be like, well, check, please, and just go. Because it's often what happens in that situation is that people go, I'm sorry, I'd had some drinks, I wasn't thinking straight. And it's like, well, I don't know. I kind of think that the fact that that's what came out of your mouth when you were disinhibited by alcohol says something about how your brain works. And I just don't really like that about how your brain works. And I don't think that we're a good fit.
Yep. Absolutely.
Maybe a fun question to end things off.
Yeah.
to stop the anger. A couple things about like cocktails and stuff. Someone was wondering about the book Semenology. Are you familiar with this book?
Yes. You've bought it, right? You have it?
I think I bought it for my spouse as a gift. Seems like something Sounds I would right. do. Mm-hmm. It's, if you don't know, it's, I think it's written by the same author who wrote Natural Harvest, which is a book of like food recipes involving semen. But Semenology is cocktail recipes involving semen. I don't know if the drinks in the book are any good. I actually have never tried them. My partner and I have, like, talked about it many times. But, like, it's just sort of a big production to, like, collect your cum in, like, a little, like, cocktail jigger and then, like, make a – like, doesn't it, like, coagulate really quickly? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, so I feel like swallowing cum directly from the source, if you will, versus, like – hanging on to it and then eating it, like cum eating later, I feel like very different fetishes.
Yes. I'm very into one, and the other makes my stomach turn to think about, unfortunately.
Exactly. Like, cum is really hot if it is being shot directly down my throat, but really, if it spends much time on any surface other than someone's skin, I don't need it in my mouth after that.
Yep.
So, like, I could be made to try one of those things, because I could be made to do a great many things, but it is not on the top of my to-do list. Unless, literally, it's like a vac bed, honestly. If someone placed a glass in front of me and was like, this drink has some semen in it, I would be like, God, that's horrifying. Put it in my face, I guess. Because, like, what's the frequency that you're going to get a well-made cocktail with cum in it in your lifetime? I'd try it if it was there, but I'm really not going to go out of my way to make it happen.
Should I dom my spouse into making and trying a number of these cocktails with their own cum and then, like, yes, writing reviews of them for my blog?
Yes. Like, frankly, it's wild to me that y'all haven't tried this. Because yeah, there are so many more obvious ways for y'all to eroticize this.
I know. Well, like, and that's the wild thing is, like, I feel like me and my spouse are, like, the ideal people to try the drinks in this book. Because, like, my spouse has actual cocktail skills and we're sex nerds. But, like, the fact that we haven't even done it leads me to believe not very many people are doing it. It's just, like,
I think you truly, like, I think the cum eating, like, after the fact, the cum eating fetish has to be a little bit more core to be worth this kind of production, right? Because I could see really lovingly producing a food product or drink with cum in it if, like, the production is the exciting servicey thing to be doing, right? Or if you're getting turned on the whole time you're putting it together because you're like, wow, look at that cum just sitting there that I'm going to get to eat. But except I'm doing it like, oh, look at that cum just like sitting there and I'm going to get to eat it.
Yeah. One more question. I feel like I don't think that you'll have a lot to say on this, but I wanted to include it because I thought it was fun. This person said, what types of drinks or mixers should I stock at my place if I really want to impress one night stands?
Truly have no idea. If you have liquor in your house, I'm like, wow.
I have a couple of ideas for this. If this is a person you know fairly well and don't think that you're going to offend them by doing this, and this person did say one night stand, so I guess this isn't really something I'd recommend for a one night stand because you could offend them. But, like, you know, if it's someone, maybe a fuck buddy, you could prepare them something pineapple-y and be like, you know, they say it makes your cum taste sweeter. Like, maybe make it about, like, that you like to drink it so that your cum will taste sweeter, because then it's flirtier and not implicating them. But there's, like, there's a drink called the Jungle Bird that uses pineapple juice. There's, like, a pineapple daiquiri. Another thing, and I don't know if this is just my experience, especially with women, a lot of people find it hot if you can make them a classic cocktail that they've heard of but maybe never tried. So if you have stuff for, I would say, an old-fashioned, a martini, or a Manhattan, any of those are really classic and make a lot of people feel very fancy because it's maybe not the type of thing they would order or know how to make or even have ever tried in their life necessarily. And it's just a really nice, classy thing to offer someone. But I would also say, like, if you're offering someone booze, you should also offer them a non-alcoholic option in the same breath. Juice, soda, water, sparkling water. Just cover your bases. I just think that's a nice thing to do.
Agreed. And I did actually have a thought on this one. So as someone who is not a drinker, what would impress me going to someone's house is I would just – simply having one or two drinks that you know how to make really, really well. I think something that, like, maybe something that I haven't particularly heard of would be neat. Because I actually would feel a little silly if you were like, I'm going to make you a Manhattan. I'd be like, bitch, I don't even know what's in that. Is one of the ingredients alcohol? I think, what's it going to taste like? Man,
all of the ingredients are alcohol, actually.
Great. Couldn't possibly tell you. So, like, I don't know if you have, like, regardless of if I've heard of it or not, I'm going to feel less silly asking about a thing I haven't heard of, actually. And I would also think it might be helpful to come up with a drink that, like, is not super boozy that you know how to make. So, like, have something in your pocket that you would suggest for people who don't drink super often, whether it's that it doesn't have a huge alcohol content or it is just a particularly fruity drink or a something like that, right? So something that would be pleasant to drink for people who don't drink a ton of alcohol.
Yeah.
and something that is just fun and like a little bit fancy and impressive to make, and just get really good at like two or three things. And I think that alone is more impressive than what those two or three things are.
Yeah. One other note I want to make on this, which unfortunately needs to be made, is like, there is a common belief, and it is unfortunately a true belief, that if someone makes you a drink, they could put something in that drink, and that's not great. And so I think especially if you're a cis man making drinks for someone who's not a cis man, but honestly kind of for everybody, I would recommend having a way of dealing with the suspicion that will arise around that problem or the fear or the anxiety. So either it might be you invite them into the kitchen and you have them pour each ingredient based on what you tell them for the recipe. Or it might be they watch you make the drinks and then they get to choose which one they want to take. And then you sip the other one in front of them, like right away, to show that it's definitely not drugged or anything. Mm-hmm. Or you serve them something that literally came right from a can, like a bottled cocktail or something like that. Just something to be mindful of. I know that a lot of folks who are cis men like might not be aware of this reality and like how serious of an anxiety this is and how common of a problem this actually is. So in the same way that you might cross the street to not be walking behind a woman who's alone at night, just to set her at ease, you might want to think about how can I make sure that this person knows that I did not put anything in their drink?
Yeah. And this, like we were talking about earlier, this doesn't have, you don't have to turn it into like a Me Too joke, because I can totally see the like instinct there to be like, take anyone, any glass is yours, anything, like, it's fine. This doesn't even necessarily have to be explicit. You can
I don't think it should be.
Exactly. I agree. I think it can be really helpful to just simply be present in the room with them when you're mixing the drink. As easy as, I don't want to yell, can you come in here while I make this for us? Right?
Yep.
Just make sure you have made it easy for them to keep an eye on you if they want to. If this is not on their mind, you don't need to bring it into the room.
Yep.
But if they're nervous and they want to see where your hands are going while you're pouring this drink, put them in front of them. Don't put your hands, like, don't have your back to them mixing a drink. That just looks unnecessarily shady. Allow them to keep an eye on what they want to without making a big to-do about it and being the, look, I'm the guy who thought about the thing. Like, you don't gotta.
Yeah. Yeah, the move of being like, look how definitely not a rapist I am is almost as weird as the, like, I could be a rapist type of a, like, joke. Like, I don't know. I totally agree with you.
Where they lean really, really hard on, look how safe I'm making you. I'm like,
oh. Yeah. Yeah, no. No.
It shouldn't be this much work for you to make me safe. I don't, why are you working so hard at this?
Yeah, I will say that if I was with someone and I noticed that they made an effort, like you just said, to make sure that I could see the drink making process and also to like let me choose my glass or like have it be very obvious that the same ingredients were going into both glasses, like if they shook it in a shaker or stirred it in a mixing glass and then poured it into both glasses, like that would make me feel so much safer and more comfortable. And I would just have such a higher opinion of that person, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. That was a lot of booze chat. Thank you for joining us for this very boozy episode of the Dildorics. We actually recorded this at 1 p.m. in the middle of the day. So the only intoxicant in my bloodstream currently is a whole lot of coffee. Odd time to be discussing alcohol, but hey, we did it.
Yeah, it worked. We made it work.
Yeah. My name is Kate Sloan. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. I have a book, which includes a section on intoxication play, if you're interested in more info on that. You can find the book at 101kinkythings.com. I write a weekly newsletter. What was the most recent one about? Don't remember. You can subscribe to that for $5 a month at katesloan.substack.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find my writing and information about my workshops at BexTalkSex.com. I teach sex ed workshops on Zoom every Wednesday night at 7:30, so you can find those by going to my website or searching Bex Caputo on Eventbrite for tickets. I'd love to see you for those. I also am very naked on the internet. You can go to @BillyLore to find all of the links for that. Last week, I just released a really, really fun, like, predicament bondage orgasm torture video where I learned that apparently, if you keep a magic wand on my dick after I come, not only do I get very sensitive, but I giggle forever. I just cackling and utter, like, it's supposed to be this very heavy kink scene, and I am just squealing and squirming and giggling indefinitely. It's a delight. Very excited to share that. So go to @BillyLore on Twitter to find some clips from that and all of the other links to see the full video and that sort of thing. Together, we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at thedildorks.com. You could also find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. You did that to get here. You know how to do that. You should also go to patreon.com/thedildorks to toss a couple of bucks our way, because that'll give you access to our exclusive Discord channel where you can chat with us and other Dildorks about all kinds of sexy, dorky things, and that's just $6 a month. And then at $12 a month, you will get access to our exclusive Patreon-only bonus episodes where I talked about not only that scene that I just released, but a ton of the other kinky, pervy things that we've been doing lately, so it's definitely worth checking that out.
Yep. Thank you also to our top tier Patreon supporters, Nat, Amelia, Matthew, and Stabitha Christie. Thank you to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo. Thank you to our sponsor for this episode, Designerbait. You can go to their website, designurbate.com, or go to the link in the show notes to get your free Chatterbait profile design. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. Hey folks, a little content note. This episode is about sex as it combines with alcohol, so we will, of course, be touching on some sexual coercion and sexual assault stuff, but that's not really going to be the main focus of the episode. Just thought that we should let you know up front, though. Take care of yourself.
And, you know, we're going to be talking about booze.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Should I?
I mean, I think the content note for alcohol was implicit in the "this is an episode about alcohol." Like, I think they got that.
Yeah, maybe I'll do it again just to cover my bases.